For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So, welcome to this kind of special, not so special day at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, everyone. You know, after some kind of wild weather, the session started with, like, on Friday, this meditation retreat many of us are participating in, with kind of bright sky and sweet bird song, and all of a sudden there was like a giant dust storm that came along and all sorts of unexpected things happening. And now we have some cool spring air. And the irises just started to pop yesterday in the garden. So please enjoy. I think I might have heard some geese this morning. Like, how nice, some wild geese in the zendo, in the house. So past 2 months, we've engaged, and many of us have engaged in this practice commitment period, centered in Zazen and community, Sangha and Dharma. And every day I just feel more and more grateful for this simple practice of sitting together. It's kind of weird, you know, I've been sitting together pretty much my entire adult life, and I still find joy in it. You know, of course I have gone through probably about 10 years of boredom, but, and wanting to quit, but, you know, at this stage of the game, not so bad. This great gratitude. Even then, I think I felt grateful, if I could remember. This simple practice of Zazen is timeless. Sitting still and silent and settling the body and settling our psyche, you know, our internal process. And if we're lucky, we touch a little clarity of non-dual awareness. Not so bad. I said yesterday, while Doge, Department of Government Efficiency, might call what we do a complete waste of time, our time in Sesshin is very precious, and our time in Zazen together is very precious, that we can even be here. So although it is precious, as Joko Beck, a teacher we've been studying, and Suzuki Roshi, our near ancestor, founder of San Francisco Zen Center, Zazen's nothing special. You know, it's just an everyday affair. Sitting around, enjoying the birds, enjoying our breath, disliking the birds, disliking our breath, being bored with our birds and our breath. Meh. But today concludes our 3-day sitting intensive retreat called Sesshin. Gathering energy, gathering our hearts and our minds and our bodies together into this oneness. I could really feel that this morning during the first period of Zazen. The kind of fruit of this practice together. So this is our 11th practice period at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate in our Sangha. And we've been householder monks of sorts, you know, for 8 weeks practicing in the midst of our everyday life. So unlike monks holed up in a cave or some monastic complex, the whole world is our monastery at this time. And then, June, as most of you know, we'll have a Dharma inquiry ceremony for our Shuso, Paula, who for these 8 weeks has shared this teaching seat with me. Let's try this again. Just a preview of the Shuso ceremony. I was just asking a question. This is kind of like a question mark, right? And I received an answer. Thank you very much. So this Shuso, you know, this Paula who's poured into a Shuso vessel for these 8 weeks, has been tending the community, this dragon community, the herd of dragons, with real sincerity and energy and devotion. I think you've thrown yourself into the house of Buddha, or at least into the house of the dragon. And so today is kind of a big day for this temple. It takes a lot to pull off this kind of thing, to support, to have practice deep enough and strong enough and broad enough and caring enough to support a Shuso, to support a Sesshin, to support a practice period. You know, we've had unexpected events of people who normally hold positions taking care of temple jobs, not being able to come for very good reasons, but still, it's like we seamlessly roll along, you know. So it seems, although I know that everybody's been working really hard behind the scenes. This is also our first Shuso ceremony since 2018. Is that like 7 years? Does that sound right? I don't know how to count things, but and some of you remember Aishin, our recent former Tanto, who drove away in an Airstream recently. She was the Shuso previous to Paula in 2018. So this tradition of a practice intensive where a teacher shares a teaching seat with a senior, let's say, no offense. But, oh, you're getting ready for the ceremony. Very good. So is this a great part of a practice period? So a practice period has a rhythm. And it's really been amazing to me how we had a feeling of a rhythm here that is did not feel very different to me, almost a little more intense, let's say, than a monastic 9-month or 3-month retreat. It had this flavor, surprisingly. And I think it is because of this dragon practice. So this tradition of a practice intensive of Buddhist disciples, Buddhist practitioners, coming together in community to open the Dharma, to practice the Dharma together during the springtime or the rainy season dates all the way back to Buddha's time, you know, 500 BCE or so. In Japanese, a term for this is ango, or peaceful abiding. Sometimes it's felt peaceful. Sometimes, not quite. During this practice period, we've been exploring the Dharma, many of you know this, of Joko Beck, Blanche Hartman, and Darlene Cohen, three modern American women ancestors who passed away in the 2010s. And we've been chanting during this Sesshin the lineage of women ancestors and the lineage of male ancestors, which is something we don't do very often here at Ancient Dragon. Sometimes that can seem a little heavy, you know, a little too high church or something. But it has been a beautiful thing. And as I mentioned yesterday, I just find it very comforting to remember the names and the teachings of our ancestors, both our non allegedly non-Buddhist ancestors and our Zen ancestors. So I just want to say homage to our Zen ancestors, homage to all of our ancestors. May they continually support our practice and our lives. You know. So, surprising, at least I surprised myself, that I, you know, after 8 weeks of coursing in these modern women ancestors who tell us, you know, look at yourself, or of course you're Buddha. Don't think you're so exceptional that you're not, you know, or meet this moment fully. You know, they have all these great teachings, some of them kind of tough, some of them kind of wild and controversial, but very much accessible, I think, to our everyday American life. But I find myself today and yesterday even coming back to Dogen Zenji. This is just like a little, maybe half of this Treasury of the True Dharma Eye that Dogen has been collection of Dogen's writings, essays, kind of. Dogen Zenji lived in the 13th century in Japan. I apologize for repeating that so many times, but I think it's good to have that context. That is very different. This was before there were cell phones. So it's kind of amazing that all this writing, you know, was done with brush and ink and been preserved for us by temple caretakers. Our Zen family style, our kind of branch of the Buddha family tree, was brought to California in 1959 by Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. Zen mind, beginner's mind, kind of the text of our modern American Zen. And this tradition continues at San Francisco Zen Center and its branching streams of temples, affiliated, but kind of rogue at the same time. So we're a little bit of a rogue branch of the family tree. So this is just context before I pop into Dogen here. And I'll just say, I'm going to read from an essay that's called Practice Period. So Dogen had practice periods and brought that practice from China, which somehow probably gobbled it up from India. And I just found this essay really interesting. One of the people in our Sangha mentioned it to me because they said, I want to know what this Ango thing is all about. And I said, oh, maybe I should go and reread this fascicle, this essay. And I was like, I'm looking through it and parts of it are like kind of mind numbing. Like, this is a senior monk and this monk sits here and this monk does this and this monk does that. And you're like, oh my gosh, you know, all this protocol and, you know, based probably loosely on some kind of Chinese civil service, you know, that was morphed into a Zen monastic code, you know, kind of like working for the government or something. But within it are these kind of gems. And so this was written, you know, in, I don't know, like 1246. So I want to share some of my surprise and delight. And if it doesn't work for you, I'm very sorry. I won't pester you with too much Dogen at this point, much further. So this begins. So this is speaking about what they call a summer practice period, which kind of begins in the spring and goes into the summer. It's 90 days, so longer than what we do. But I'm just going to call this what's summer practice period, just practice period. So in an informal talk to open the practice period, my late teacher, who Dogen studied with in China, referred to as Old Buddha Tiantong, presented this poem, piling up bones in an open field, gouging out a cave in the empty sky. Break through the barrier, the gate of dualism, and splash in a bucket of pitch black lacquer. So this is what our practice period has been doing. I thought maybe I wouldn't tell you that in the beginning because nobody'd sign up. But, you know, piling up bones in an open field, gouging out a cave in the empty sky, breaking through the barrier of delusion. I'm sorry, dualism. Same thing. And splash in a bucket of pitch black lacquer. To grab hold of this spirit, to train constantly for 30 years, eating meals, sleeping, and stretching your legs, this requires unstinting support. The structure of a practice period provides such support. It is the head and face of Buddhas and ancestors. So this practice period is like this body, the head and a face. All of your heads and faces of all the Buddhas and ancestors. It has been intimately transmitted, that is conveyed, and, you know, the practice periods I've participated in were conveyed by somebody else, from somebody else, from somebody else. And we're conveying that here now with each other. Regard the whole of each practice period as the whole of Buddhas and ancestors. From top to bottom, the practice period is Buddha ancestors. Little like Blanche saying, you're all Buddhas. Don't think you're such a great exception. The practice period covers everything without an inch of land or a speck of earth left out. This is like radical inclusivity. The practice period is an anchoring peg that is neither new or old, has never arrived and will never leave. It's the size of your fist. And it takes the form of grabbing you by the nose. These must be like, you know, old Japanese references to something being grabbed by the nose and the fist. But I don't want to get sidetracked. When the practice period is opened, empty sky cracks apart and all of space is dissolved. I mean, what were they taking, thinking of this, right? Little. But when the practice period is closed, the earth explodes, leaving no place undisturbed. When the koan, when the deep meaning or the story, the teaching of opening the practice period is taken up, it looks like something arrived. When the fishing nets and bird nests of the practice period are thrown away, so we're going to throw away the fishing nets and the nests. You know, sometimes you create a little nest in the practice period. You're like, I think I'm going to make myself kind of comfortable and feather this nest. Sometimes your nets, I'm going to grab some dharma, you know, fish for some great awakening. They're all thrown away. Looks like something's gone. However, those who participated intimately in the practice period have been covered with opening and closing all along. An inch of grass has not appeared for 10,000 miles. That is, we've done nothing, nothing special. So you might say, this is great, give me back the meal money for these 90 days. So, you know, talk to our treasurer if you want a refund. If they're like, what? I got nothing from this. And now, you know, what? It's a ripoff. Dogen goes on. If you're fortunate enough to practice a spring practice period before our dew-like life drops down. whether in the realm of humans or celestial beings. We will surely replace our skin, flesh, bones, and marrow with the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of Buddha ancestors. So this is being saturated in the Dharma of right now, of the present moment, of our only teacher, the present moment. Because of this, those who engage in a practice period are called 1,000 Buddhas and 10,000 ancestors. Welcome, 1,000 Buddhas and 10,000 ancestors. The reason for this practice period is the mind, consciousness, and body of Buddha ancestors. Practice period is the top of the head, the eye, the fists, the nostrils, the Buddha nature circle drawn in the air, as well as the whisk, the wooden staff, the bamboo stick that the Shuso is actually going to wield. These are all symbols of teaching, and the sitting mat of the Buddhas and ancestors, which might actually be the like that zagu. Then Dogen quotes a teaching from a sutra that I'm not aware of. But it says, the Buddha said to the complete enlightenment bodhisattva. So, you know, you all have Dharma names. And if anybody has complete enlightenment as your Dharma name, you have names even though you might not know it yet, but people who receive the precepts have Dharma names. So, Wade, what is your Dharma name?
Shinyo Kaisetsu.
Shinyo Kaisetsu.
Mm-hmm.
True suchness, ocean of integrity.
Thank you,
Niozan. From Niozan. Wonderful. So that's maybe even a little better than complete enlightenment, Bodhisattva. Ocean of integrity,
it's Bodhisattva. A lot to work on.
So the Buddha said this to that bodhisattva, complete enlightenment, and to all those in the assembly, as well as to all beings. Here's what has been said. Those who participate in the practice period should abide as pure bodhisattvas, their minds free from the world's chattering, uninvolved with the world's opinions. Now, this doesn't mean brain dead, but not being moved by them. How do we listen to the chattering and the world's opinions without getting knocked down by them or super intoxicated by them? On the opening day of the practice period, make a statement like this in front of the Buddha image. I don't think we did this. Maybe we'll do it next time. I, monk, nun, layman or laywoman, this is old terminology, so-and-so. So I, true suchness, ocean of integrity, now get into the bodhisattva vehicle. In order to activate the practice of tranquility and together with all beings, enter the true mark of purity. This is what Joko might say, being freed from the self-centered dream. The true mark of purity, and abide in it so that we all can make complete enlightenment in our temple. The wisdom of equanimity and the freedom of liberation are without boundary. I pay homage to them. Without being influenced by the opinions of the world, I will engage, which might be like Doge is like, don't do that practice period. It's a waste of time. Without being influenced by the opinions of the world, I will engage in the 3-month practice period with all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the 10 directions. because I am now embarking on the practice of the great cause of unsurpassable, wondrous enlightenment of all bodhisattvas. I am free of the bondage of the world. Good people, this is a practice period that manifests bodhisattvas. Those words felt really true to me. And free from the bondage of the world is not turning away from the world, but it's turning towards it without trying to manipulate it, with a heart that comes from compassion and a wish for the benefit of all beings and the wisdom about how to enact that. Sometimes, you know, it takes a lifetime to unpack a paragraph of Dogen, so I apologize for glossing over a few things. Then a little story is told, and getting close to the end, so if your legs are sore, feel free to stretch them out. But this is a great story, which Kirsten actually pointed out to me. Like, you know, she has a PhD in comparative literature, so she hasn't been practicing Buddhism for long, but she can really spot some important details, which has pointed me back to this fascicle. The world-honored one, Buddha, held a practice period in a monastery. On the last day, when all the monks, so when you see monk, think of yourself, lay person is also invited to these practice periods. On the last day, when all monks are to confess their faults and ask for forgiveness, maybe they were having a full moon ceremony, Manjushri, the bodhisattva of wisdom, who yields a sword to cut away delusion, or cut through delusions, suddenly appeared before the assembly. Imagine that. And Buddha's great disciple, Mahakashyapa, asked Manjushri a question. And Mahakashyapa was considered to be like kind of the most strictly ascetic disciple of Buddha. Later, maybe in Chinese Buddhism, it was thought of when you see the hand with the flower, that's Mahakashyapa being acknowledged by Buddha. So it would be like Buddha looked at Mahakashyapa, and Mahakashyapa smiled and held up a flower and demonstrated their deep connection of their hearts and minds. But Mahakashyapa was known for being a very ascetic, disciplined monk, right? A rule follower, kind of like hardcore practitioner, like us, you know, sitting long retreats, not just doing meditation with an app, which is really great, but, you know, not as rough as being stuck in the container of a sashin. So Mahakashyapa asked Manjushri, "Where have you spent the summer practice period?" And Manjushri replied, "In three places: a demon's palace, a wealthy man's house, and a house of prostitution." Anybody during the practice period had any of these experiences? You have good company in Manjushri, this great bodhisattva of wisdom, who does not put up with nonsense. And Mahakashyapa immediately assembled the monks to announce that Manjushri would be expelled. You know, because you'd get kicked out of the community if you really, there were a set of rules, and you'd be booted if you violated one of them, right? And probably one of these three counted as one of the major offenses that got you kicked out. Or maybe all three, each one was like enough to get kicked out. So this is like a triple violation. And the monks are assembled, and Mahakashyapa is getting ready to be like, "Okay, we're expelling this great, great bodhisattva, this great enlightening being, for the crimes of spending the practice period in a demon's palace, whatever that is. Could be like some great estate someplace. A wealthy man's house that also could be a great estate someplace. Or a house of prostitution. So maybe Vegas, I don't know where else it's legal or illegal. Right as he was about to strike the Han that says, you're out, the mallet is raised, and all of a sudden, multiple Manjushris appeared that were all in multiple monasteries. Like, imagine this, like some psychedelic appearance or holographic or some, you know, amazing thing. It's not just that Manjushri popped in from the house of prostitution, but like everybody else did, you know, a bunch of Manjushris. So this is like, we're all a bunch of Manjushris here, you know, and Buddhas. And Buddha said to Mahakashyapa, like, which of these Manjushris are you going to expel? How do you know? Mahakashyapa is like, And this essay ends with, thus, although the Buddha practiced a practice period in one place, while Manjushri practiced in three places, Manjushri was not a non-participant in the practice period. Remember I said, even if you didn't come here, you're already enrolled with us? I'm like, wow, I guess that might not be wrong. Or at least somebody agreed with me in ancient, or let's say medieval Japan. Manjushri was not a non-participant in the practice period. Those who are non-participants in the practice period are non-Buddhas and non-Bodhisattvas. So this must mean everybody is a Buddha and a Bodhisattva. There are no descendants of Buddha ancestors who are not participating in the practice period. Know that all practice period participants are descendants of Buddha ancestors. So maybe that's enough for me. I want to congratulate people a little in advance for doing this practice together, even if you're not aware that you were even doing it, which is the great mystery of our practice. And thank you all very much. May we carry this practice on endlessly. And we have a little bit of time for chatting together before we go on to our next event. So if anyone has something to say, I think a microphone will find you, or Lou or someone will help people online. Buddhas and ancestors speak. Oh, Tatiana.
Hello, thank you for your talk. I really enjoyed this fascicle that you mentioned, but I had actually something to say about the discussion that we had yesterday.
Oh, please.
So I feel like I have done my homework since I've come up with a possible answer to a question that was made by Benji Jerry. Mm-hmm. She asked us, what is the effort without desire? Mm. And so she has started with basically saying that effort has to be volitional. So if it is without desire, can there be any effort? And it occurred to me that it is actually effort that asserts a function.
Mm.
And that function is part of the total function. So I feel that that is what is an effort without desire.
And where did this, did you say you did homework? So did you look at
No, I
you
just
thought about it.
I just thought about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, great. Wonderful. Functioning, completely functioning. Benji, are you satisfied with that?
I like that. I am. And it's because functioning is something you just do normally.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think of there's a story of Suzuki Roshi who's walking across the San Francisco Bridge, and he says when he walks across the bridge in the mist, his robe gets wet.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, okay, whether he thinks about it or wants it or doesn't want it, his robe's going to get wet. So that's kind of what it's like. It's just like, you know, you don't really think about when you're functioning or what you're doing, you just do it. So it's that sense of you just do something and then stuff happens, you get wet, you know? And I like thinking about that with effort, because... Mm-hmm. In some way, it makes effort effortless.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you just show up with your mind and body in the same spot, and stuff happens. Yeah, so it's a really nice way to think about effort as a functioning. Thank you very much. I like that a lot.
Thank you for sharing that and delving into that great teaching, effort without desire. Libby.
I just want to thank you for bringing in Dogen and the magical mystery tour.
Trip.
Magical mystery energy of, you know, that it is, you know, I love the women ancestors we've been studying and how they ground me in my life. And in my lived experience in a way that I can connect with every day. Every day that I touch into those teachings, it helps me ground in the present. And yet there is something different that happens with this other form of teachings, mm-hmm. That isn't as clear to latch onto, you know, and to map mm-hmm. onto my psyche, as these modern ones are, you know, there's something that opens up, but it can't quite be mapped, you know, and so it opens into something beyond. It's a reminder that not too tight, not too loose, mm-hmm. you know, it's like not too, you know, I'm not trying to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can be done. Something like that. So mm-hmm. anyway, I appreciate, and there's a playfulness that you're bringing to the, as you were bringing Dogen in, and it's just, it's fun. I don't know, there's something.
It is. Not such hard work as looking at all your delusions and all your habit patterns and how you mess up in relationship and, you know, yeah. And it's good to be grounded, which is Joko's great teaching, because sometimes you can get lost in the clouds of these teachings and see thousands of Manjushris and Mahakashyapas and forget who you're talking to or how you're acting in the world. So we need both. Magical mystery tour. I love it.
Thank you, Hogetsu.
Thank you, Howard.
I'm just adding another story to this. One of my favorite little stories is from Zen Master Sung San, who is a Korean teacher, the tradition in which I started in. So, not Soto, but he's this like bald, I mean, shaved head, glasses, very sort of jubilant kind of guy, bouncy. And he's talking to this student who's like latching onto him and like really hard. And he's like, the student's kind of like, oh, Zen Master Sun Sun, I'll go wherever you're going to go. Like, I will follow you to the end of the earth. And Zen Master Sun Sun is like, oh, I don't think you want to follow me where I'm going to go. It's like, why? Where are you going to go? It's like, well, when I die, I'm going to go to hell. And the student's like, no, you can't go to hell. Why are you going to hell? And Zen Master Sun Sun responds, well, I'm going to go to hell. I'm going to start a Zen center over there.
Thank you. So he was in a demon's house. Thank you, Howard. Great story. Venerable teacher. Okay, let's move along in the program. And that means, I think maybe no announcements today. Everybody knows ancientdragon.org. And I'll just say tomorrow night, I think we're going to have also a way-seeking mind talk. And so that might be interesting to see how someone came to practice and follows the path in our very own Sangha. But you can check out our website, and I want to thank everyone who is here for supporting our Sesshin in the cloud and on the ground and engaging the Dharma in these very difficult times. There's still some playfulness, and if you want your money back, again, see the Ancient Dragon Treasurer. So we'll chant the Bodhisattva vows, and then will end today. So goodbye, cloud folk. May our intention extend to every being and place with the true benefit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is surpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them.